Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me on this third episode of Paint Everywhere. If you're just joining me, I appreciate you listening. I'm doing this a little bit differently this time. If you're listening, thank you. But you may be watching because I am doing this podcast via YouTube. So if you're listening, thanks. And if you are watching on YouTube, thank you. And if you are listening, do check out my YouTube page. It's Mike DeSisti on YouTube. And I will put that in the show notes as well, because I am in the process of streaming these on YouTube as well. So you can watch me talk. I know it sounds horribly interesting, but I will provide some, since it is an art and photography centered podcast, I will provide some imagery and stuff too as well. You won't totally miss out when you're listening to the podcast, but you will get some extra visuals when you're looking at it on YouTube. So I just wanted to mention that. And it's kind of crazy. I just started looking into it and researching podcasting, and I didn't start this until a little while ago, about a couple of weeks ago. And then I started looking into videotaping, doing streaming the podcasts on YouTube, and got a microphone, and I got found a place in my basement where I have set up this little area here, where I can record these video podcasts, and put some little paintings up. I have this let's see if you can see it here. I know. Sorry if you're listening on the podcast, but I have some things up. I have a thing behind me that I made about 5 years ago. It says "World's Best Coffee." It's just Christmas lights smashed into a foam core board that we made for a for a Christmas party. It's from the Elf movie that we're big fans of in my family. We watch it every year for Christmas. My kids are a little older now, want to be 15 pretty soon, and the other one's 12, but we still watch it every Christmas Eve. It's kind of a tradition. We love the Will Ferrell and Elf and everything. So, but I got it set up, and I don't entirely know what I'm doing and what I'm going to talk about. And you can see these curtains are moving. If you're watching it on YouTube, and that's because my cat Emily is in here, walking around and wondering what the heck I am doing. so I am, I'm just going to launch this and just go for it. And that's kind of, how I do things, kind of how I started my art career too. And I'm going to kind of get into that a little bit and talk about how that started. I don't think I ever really did that very much in the other previous two podcasts, talked about how I started and how that got going. And it's kind of how I, how I started this podcast and how I started these videos and how I'm actually recording this one too. I don't think I was completely ready to sit down and record this, but I started pushing buttons around and it said, do a test, and I hit test and it said, "Are you ready to record?" And, I wasn't really entirely ready to record, but I hit record anyway. And it said, "Now you're recording." And I'm like, "Whoa, okay, I better start talking." So that's what I'm doing now. So I'm going to ramble for a little while and I'll see where this takes me. But I just realized right now that I really haven't introduced myself. My name is Mike DeSisti. And again, thanks for listening. This is the Paint Everywhere podcast. I am an artist and I am a photojournalist. I work for a daily newspaper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. and that's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I've been a photojournalist there for about 15 years. I started in 2008. And, you know, I've always been kind of a geek with a camera running around as a little kid. Just really loved photography growing up. And, I went to high school, not the greatest student, but took some photography classes in high school and just breezed through. Didn't really breeze through. I had a really hard time getting through. And when I graduated high school, I went to a community college because I really didn't have any direction in life at all. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I didn't really want to go away to college not having any direction and waste a bunch of money and go to like a 4-year school and not really have a major or anything like that. So I went to a community college where I grew up. I grew up in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, in the Chicago area. And I went to a community college and, you know, took a bunch of classes and just really kind of floundered for a while. And I took a photography class and it was just kind of, fine art photography. And I had a instructor there. His name was Art Hand, which is like the greatest name for an instructor for photography or for art at all. And I'm going to raise up my chair here. It's sinking. I'm short enough as it is. I don't need to get any lower. So he was really instrumental in my career. He encouraged me, he said, "You're not horrible at photography. You're actually pretty good at it. I don't know what your, he said, I don't know what your direction is in life, but maybe you should pursue photography or art." He said that at the time. He said, "Do something with art." He said, I remember him saying, you have a sensitivity to you, and I remember growing up and I remember, being kind of a sensitive kid, just things would always kind of, I would react to things probably, overreact to things probably more sensitively than other kids would, I would maybe overreact and, when I would be, quote unquote bullied or whatever. I had a sensitivity to me, and I would see things and I would react to them and I would make images of them and I would see things, I think, in ways maybe other people didn't. And I use that to my advantage with a camera. So, he encouraged me to go away or, maybe pursue photography, by going away to a school that I could concentrate on photography. And I did. And I found the best school in Illinois that had a good photography program. I wanted to stay in state for in-state tuition. And I chose Southern Illinois University, Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. It was a really fun school. I actually went down there with a couple friends and, I'm old and, at this time when I was, growing up, there was no like family visits to colleges or anything like that. It was, go down with a couple of friends and party for a weekend and see if you like the school. And I did. And the campus was great. And so I went down there and, liked it. And then I decided, okay, I'm going to major in photography. And, I did that, went down there, but I majored in more fine art photography, I didn't take any photojournalism classes or anything like that. I just did more fine art stuff. We had classes with cyanotypes and, large format. We did classes with like these big 8x10 cameras and it was really cool. It was all film too. This was like back in 1996, 97. Before that, I graduated in 1996. This is like 1994, 95. We did this one class. It was all Holga, a Holga plastic camera, which was really cool. So it was very cool. It was very artsy, and it was really kind of my jam. And the last semester in college, the school that I went to at Southern Illinois, they had a school newspaper. It was called The Daily Egyptian. And, you know, I had a lot of respect for photojournalism, and I got a newspaper all growing up, and, I knew what photojournalism was, and I just kind of wanted to see if I could do that type of photography. So I applied to get a job at the school newspaper, and, you know, they let me give it a shot, and I tried it out, and, you know, I figured out, you know, I realized I was pretty good at it, and I really enjoyed it too. And the really cool thing that I liked about it, the photojournalism aspect of photography versus the fine art aspect of photography, was that, in photojournalism, while I was out, you know, doing my assignments, you know, you get an assignment, you go out and you had a job to do, and you either did your job and, you know, you got a photo, or you didn't do it. You know, in fine art photography, you know, you could take blurry photos of your, you know, we would sit around in class and we critique these, you know, blurry photos of a barn for a half hour. And, you know, that was the way it was with art photography. But, you know, if I went out and, you know, had a job for the newspaper and got a blurry photo of the mayor talking because I was feeling, you know, blue that day, you know, that I wasn't doing my job. So I really like the accountability to it, and I like the fast pace aspect of it, and I liked having deadlines, and it was a lot of fun. But you know, that was the last semester, and I got done, and it wasn't like I, you know, found my calling in photojournalism. And I didn't, you know, think, you know, I'm going to be a photojournalist, you know. And so I got done with college, and I graduated. And like I said, this is probably 1996. And, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So, you know, if anyone's out there listening and they're in college, or, you know, you really don't know what your passion is or anything like that. You know, I knew I liked photography, but I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do still. And I was graduated, and I was still like, okay, I'm still kind of confused. You know, that's okay. It's okay to not really know what you want to do, but I did know that I wanted to do something with photography. So I'm like, I'm gonna get a job anywhere I can working in photography. So I got a job working at one of these 1 hour photo mats. And if you're old like me, you know that there was a time with film when you drop your film off at these 1 hour photo mats, and you would, wait an hour and your film would be developed and you get these prints. So I did that for a while, and it was, you know, it was weird. You get these people to drop off this film and you've developed their film and you get these weird photos, and not all of them, but, you know, it was, you know, I knew that it was not going to be my life profession working at a 1 hour photo mat, but I did it, and it was photography related. And, then I did some, freelancing at some commercial studios where, at the time they were doing, you know, bedroom, photos for, catalogs of bedroom sets and stuff like that. And, you know, and I didn't take the photos for these bedroom sets. I just helped the photographers that were taking the photos, and, you know, like I would sweep the floors and build the bedroom sets and put these wood floors together and make coffee for them. And, you know, which was fine because that's kind of the path you have to take in order to get a, you know, if you want to get a job in commercial photography and learn the trade of it, that's kind of the path you have to take. And that's fine and everything. But the thing I didn't really like about that is, the photographers that were doing that were, you know, they were bored with their job, and they just were kind of counting, you know, watching the clock and waiting for the day to end. And I didn't want that for the rest of my life, you know. And I remembered, you know, back in my days working at the Daily Egyptian, back at the school newspaper doing photojournalism, and I remember how exciting that was, and, you know, like how fast the time went. And I remember thinking, okay, well, I don't want to work at a 1 hour photo mat. I don't want to do commercial stuff. I guess I'll pursue photojournalism, you know? So, I went that route, and, you know, I had to get a portfolio together. And that's the other cool thing about, you know, photojournalism. It's not like You know, I mean, it, a little bit, it's good to have connections, you know, and know people, but you have to have a good portfolio, and you have to know how to take good photos to get a job. You know, you can't just know a guy and they'll get you a job. You know, if you can't take good pictures, you don't get a job in photojournalism. And at least, you know, that's how it was back then. And that's how it is today too. You know, I remember talking to a guy, you know, early on when I was in college, I'm like, how do I get a job at the National Geographic? And the guy just said, you got to know how to shoot. And, it's true. You know, you really need to, so I like that accountability of it. I like knowing, you know, you have to be good in order to get a job. So I got my portfolio together, and that's just a collection of images that show that you know how to do a variety of different journalism type of images, you know, sports photos, you know, action photos, news photos, you know, like it could be car accidents and fire scenes and all kinds of stuff like that. Or it could be, you know, and then just other kinds of, you know, news related images that you would see in a news publication or a newspaper. I got that together and I sent it around to all these different news publications. And, you know, this is a still a time before really the internet. So, you know, I didn't have a website. I didn't have anything like that. I just had slide images. So it was like, you know, these, you know, if of this era, you know, there's slide images that you'd, the kind that you'd put in a slide projector and view like on a slide machine, but you would send these out in a little sleeve and people would get a loop. It was like a magnifying glass thing that you would like look at them on a light table. So they would look at those and look at your images. And, you know, I had this portfolio that was not very good. It was just stuff from my college newspaper. And, I remember sending this portfolio. I remember thinking, you know, okay, where do I want to work in the country? You know, where in the country, where are the different newspapers that I want to work at? You know, and I was clueless. You know, I mean, when I was in college, I you know, I didn't take any photojournalism classes. I didn't know what I was doing. I took all art photography classes. So there was I had no mentors to say, you know, if you're going to try to get a job, this is what you do. So I'm like, I'm going to apply for the New York Times, the Washington Post. You know, I had a picture, I think, of like a deer. So I applied for National Geographic. You know, I applied for all these silly, you know, newspapers that I had no business applying for. And, you know, lo and behold, I sent my portfolio out to all these places and nobody called me. Except for one newspaper. One person called me from, I sent a portfolio to like the Elgin in Elgin, Illinois, the Elgin Courier. And the photo editor called me back and she said, I got your portfolio. And she said, it's not good. So, which was deflating, what was really cool about that phone call is she didn't hang up on me. She said, here's what you need to do though. You know, she went through each photo with me and she said, you know, you need to crop this, you need to tone this better, you need to make it lighter, you know, make it lighter, make it darker, take these photos out totally. And she also said, you need to go out and take more photos, you know, make better images. And I did that and I improved my portfolio and I sent it around to some different other publications and I just kept going to different places, you know, and this is, you know, back in 1997, 1998, and there was a lot more news publications around that time. And, you know, I think people are kind of aware of the struggles that newspapers are having and just news in general, is having staying afloat these days. And, but there was a lot more publications around and I, you know, I got some gigs freelancing for some different publications and, it was cool. You know, I built my portfolio and then I got an internship up in Appleton, Wisconsin, and built my portfolio up and, you know, working there. And it was great. It was Appleton's about 90 miles north of Milwaukee. And I worked there as an intern for a few months. Well, actually for about 9 months, it was a internship. It just kept extending and I just kind of wouldn't leave. And, a job opened up there and, you know, I applied for it and I didn't get it. And then another one opened up a little while later and I applied and I got it. So that was back in, 1999. So this is really dating me, but I end up getting a job there, and I worked there until 2008. But it was really cool because, and this is where I'm going to kind of get into my painting foray a little bit. In between the time I started there in 1998 and when I left there in 2008, the internet kind of came along. And, when I was a little kid, not only did I was kind of a geek about doing photography, but I also had like a little Bell and Howell movie camera. I wish I had it, but I lent it to somebody. But I was into doing video. It wasn't video at the time. It was film. And so the internet came along, and we were able to, do video for our newspaper's website. And this is the time where you would post video. You could shoot a video. I had like my own little personal video camera, and I could shoot a video and edit it with the first original iMovie. And you could load it to the website, and you'd click play and have to wait about 3 minutes, and then it would play on the website. But I was really into it. I was just totally jazzed about being able to the ability to, you could take it's essentially being able to add motion and audio to your still photos, doing video. And I love that. I love that that element of storytelling, that ability to add that those levels to storytelling. I think, there's something about video that, I can take a bunch of photos, but I found out I was not able to make people laugh or cry the way I was able to do with still photos that I could with video. And there was something really compelling about that, to me. So I was really getting into video a lot, at that time. And I got into it. And now around 2003, when I was at the Post Crescent, I also got into doing abstract painting for a little while. And I got into it and, did it for a little bit. And but this is still at the time when I'm, at 2003, I've only been at my first full-time job as a photojournalist for a few years, and I'm just starting to get into video too. So I'm doing this abstract painting. I had some little canvases. I even built my own easel. And, I did it for a little bit, and I just kind of got way too, it was early in my career, and I was kind of focusing on my skills as a photographer, and also my new skills as a photo, as a video journalist too. And the painting just kind of went by the wayside, and I just kind of, got focused on other things too. So I kind of gave up my abstract painting and focused on, doing other stuff with photography and video. So, gave up that, stopped doing abstract painting, but didn't, I still saved all the stuff, put it in a closet and just let it sit there. And then around 2008, well, in 2008, I got a job doing strictly just video. I got hired at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where I'm at now. And that was at a time when we had at the Journal Sentinel, we had 15, about 15 staff, full-time staff photographers. And fast forward to today, we have three now. We're looking for a fourth, so we're hiring a fourth. The fourth one, there was one that a photographer just left, but we're hiring a fourth. So we have four. So we went from 15 to down to four. So I got hired to do strictly just video at the Journal Sentinel in 2008, and now I am doing a mix of still photos and video. So typically my job is kind of like going out and doing still photography and doing video at the same time, kind of both at the same time. So, but I mean, I absolutely love my day job as a photojournalist at the Journal Sentinel. I think I said on the last podcast that I did, if you listen to it, I mean, and it's true. Like I am extremely, extremely lucky to have a job that I would be doing on my day off. Like I do. I go out and take photos, of the sunrise or the sunset, or, go out and shoot the moon or whatever when I'm not working. And to have a to have a job that you would do when you're not working is kind of the goal, you know? So, you know, to have your job is your hobby. It's a riot. So, you know, anytime I, you know, I'm out on an assignment and I'm taking photos, I'm just like, you gotta be kidding me. You know, this is crazy that I'm getting paid to do this. So it's really cool. So, okay. So painting, this is kind of a new hobby for me. Last spring break, this is March of 23. So right now we are in August of 24. So we're 12, 13, 14, 15 months ago. We have a basement, which I'm in now. We have an unfinished basement, and it's got just white, it's got cinder block walls. At the time it was just gray cinder block walls. We actually had to have the basement, this is about 10 years ago, the basement was like caving in, which happens, I guess, around this area that I live in, cause it's all like clay dirt. And over time the clay like caves in the basement wall. So we had to have these like three walls of the three sides of the basement, like dug out and excavated. And it was a gob ton of money. So we had to have it all dug out, and we had to have these like steel beams put up. It was so much money. It was like, we were going to get a kitchen remodel, and we're like, no, now we can't do that. So we have to have this basement redone. So, but you know, whatever, boohoo for us. But you know, so anyway, we had this basement, these beams put in. So we had the basement all kind of torn up and everything like that. So forever, we didn't have any paint on the wall. So we painted the basement wall white, and it was just white. My kids are like, you know, at the time they're like, you know, this basement wall looks barren and white, and we need art for it. And they're like, Dad, you have all this art stuff, which I still had from like 2003 or whatever that I didn't throw away, that I had in a closet, like canvases and paint and stuff like that. And they're like, you should paint something for the wall. And like, well, you know, why don't we all, like me and my two daughters, I'm like, why don't we all paint something, you know? So I had these like little 4x4 canvases left over, you know, these little tiny ones, and we all painted something. Me and my 12-year-old, who she loves art. She does all kinds of things. She was on my first podcast. You can go back and listen to it on, she's really good at helping me know when I'm done with a painting, which is really, really difficult. But she and I painted something. My, the 14-year-old, who's going to be 15 very soon, she did a digital art. We got it printed on canvas. So it looked really cool. So we all did something, and I don't know, man, something just kind of, a light went on for me when I did that little canvas. I was like, this is a lot of fun, you know? And I got into it big time. And I, you know, I did that little 4x4, and then I think I did like another, you know, 20x24 or maybe even smaller, like a 11x14. And then, you know, went a little bigger and, you know, did like a, you know, 20x24 and just kind of painted again. And something kind of reignited in me, and I remembered how much I enjoyed it. And it was just something about it. You know, I was not on a screen. I wasn't, you know, thinking about work. I wasn't doing, you know, I was just, it was just painting, and it was awesome. So, I'd always also really wanted to do like great big canvases, you know, like as big as I could buy. And there was just something that was always, I don't know. I had a block against it. I'd never really kind of deeply looked into it, but I always thought that they were like super, you know, like expensive, or, you know, like if you started it and made a mistake, you had to throw it away or something stupid like that. You know, I don't know what I was thinking, but, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, an artist friend, John O'Hara, shout out to you. But he was, he like texted me a link to like Michael's and was like, hey, these are 2 for 1, you know, like the, normally they're like $100 and they were on sale for 2 for 1. So they were like $50 each. So I'm like, I went to Michael's and I bought a couple great big canvases and I just put a bunch of canvas on or a bunch of paint on the canvas and went to town. And it was so cool. I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to explain, but, and I didn't have any, I wasn't like, I'm going to paint trees and a mountain or anything like that. I'm just, it was purely abstract. And I mean, you know, I guess I can explain it. Like I don't do yoga and I don't meditate and I have tried, I really do. And I know how important they are to your mind and I need it. And I really, it's very, it's something that, you know, I run, and I know how important physical activity is and how, and for me, like I can tell if I don't run for a while, what it does to my mental state. But, so that's why, I mean, I understand the importance of mindfulness. But you know, even when I'm running, I'm thinking about different projects or different things. And that's good. It's good. It's a good thing. I use it for a different kind of state of mind. I come up with really interesting ideas when I'm running. A different like set of, I don't know if endorphins go off or different types of ideas happen that don't normally happen when I'm just sitting still. I use it as a good thing. But I can't use it to clear my mind. Like I can with, like you should be able to with yoga or meditating. But I found out that when I'm painting, I am not thinking about anything other than painting. Like I'm not thinking about the past. I'm not thinking about the future. I'm thinking about what I'm doing in front of me. I'm thinking about the paint that's going on the canvas and that is it. And it's very rare for me to be in the present and not be in the future and not be in the past. And that's the only way I can really get there. And that is one of the really cool things about it. And it's just something I really enjoy. I mean, there's, you know, there's a lot of things about it, you know, and I could go on and on about it, you know. And the other thing that's really cool about it, you know, I've been doing photography for, you know, 25 years. And I talked a little bit about this in the last podcast too, but I'll go into it a little bit deeper too. You know, I have serious issues with my self-confidence, you know, with looking at a photo and really enjoying it, you know, or knowing that it's good. I look at every picture that I take and I look at it and I pick out all the things that are wrong with it, you know, and that's not good. That's not good mentally, you know? But it's just part of the job, I guess, you know? It's not like it's driving me insane or anything, but, it's just the nature of my job, I guess. But maybe it's because I haven't been painting for very long and I've never had any formal training at all. But when I'm painting and I don't have really any direction on what I'm going to paint, I just kind of let the paint do the talking. When I'm done with it, I look at it and I think that's good. I'm very satisfied with what I have completed. And it's a really good feeling. You know, and not to mention just not having any preconceived notion on what I'm going to complete, you know, like there's no, I don't get mad at myself. I don't, you know, a lot of times when I'm out doing photography, if we're keeping the theme of comparing photography to painting, you know, there's a lot of mistakes you can make when you're taking pictures. You know, things can be out of focus. You can have things underexposed. You can have things overexposed. You know, I there's not a lot of mistakes that I can make when I'm painting. Yeah, I'll mix a bunch of colors up and they'll turn to brown, but I just throw them away and I don't really get upset about it, you know? but you know, I kind of just let the paint, you know, do the talking, and it just kind of guides me. I know it sounds super kind of esoterical, but it's true, you know, and the paint is seriously, it's in charge. It's the boss. And whenever I start to try to, you know, I'm going to do, you know, like, when I start to try to take too much control over the paint, it I know it sounds crazy, but it lets me know who's boss. It'll say like, dude, what are you doing? You know, you're not that good, you know, just tone it down a little bit. So it's really fun. I enjoy it. I don't think that there's really that big of a drawback for me, really, for not having any formal like training. I think, you know, maybe I should take some lessons. Maybe I should, you know, you got to know some rules before you can break them. But, you know, maybe I will. Maybe, you know, when I have some more time, I just really don't with my full-time job right now. And, you know, I also teach a class at Marquette. I teach an introduction to news photography class, and that's coming up. That's starting in a couple weeks. And that's going to keep me busy, but I don't know if I really, you know, doing some kind of a training or a class that does appeal to me, but I don't think it's in the cards right now. Just cause I don't have much time, but, you know, but from what I've done so far, people seem to like it. You know, I've sold paintings, and I don't think people really, not that they care, not that they don't care or care really, but I think when, you know, you don't have to really have an education in art to look at art and know you like it. So I think that works to my advantage. So either you like it or you don't, you know, so, you know, I think it's been pretty cool in that respect. So anyway, I think I've rambled long enough, and I'm going to save some other things for the next podcast, but, that's kind of what my story with how I started painting, and I'm just really enjoying it. And, I have one that I'm working on, and I'm almost done with it. And I'm going to post this to, I have a Substack that I hope you subscribe to. And it's a newsletter that goes out, and you can subscribe to that. And I'll put these in the show notes if I can figure out how to do that, which I think I should be able to. But so thank you very much for listening. And I'm trying to remember if there's anything I need to mention that I should mention before I leave this. And this has been pretty cool. Been a lot of fun. So thank you for sticking with me. And I will see you next time on Paint Everywhere. Thanks. Bye.